Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. Now Mark, let's quickly recap what happened in the bond market this week. To end the week, we are seeing yields jump again, the 10-year is back over 1.6%. But one thing that was interesting about this week is all the bond auctions that went off. We had a couple, and quite frankly, a lot of the auctions were mediocre. That's kind of the general summary that I have received from a lot of guests and a lot of people I read over their stuff. One of the interesting things, though, is that with rates jumping at the tail end of this week, it means that all of these people that bought, or all the institutions that bought these auctions, they're all underwater. And I realize that's very short-term, a very short-term way to look at it. But Mark, what do you take away from the auctions that happened this week, and then at the end of the week, the continued sell-off in bonds?
Yeah, I think that you're right. You know, the auctions, $120 billion of coupons. And that's the sovereign sector. We had a very large some corporate issuance as well. You know, Verizon had this one bond, $25 billion offered, $100 billion in bids. And so there does still seem to be a strong enough demand for U.S. coupons, both private, you know, corporate, as well as the government. But you know, the yield increase, this is the sixth consecutive week that yields are going up. This is a trend. I know sometimes people tell me, oh, price action's so choppy. This is a trend. And it doesn't seem to me that it's over. We're finishing the week above 162, and I'm trying to think, like, where can we go? What makes sense? And so I think a lot of people are on the idea that, well, we're going back to, like, pre-COVID economy. And if that's true, we should look at, like, where bonds were at the end of 2019. And I took – and it's maybe, like, looking at one date is not good enough, so I try to look at the average. And in Q4 2019, we averaged 180 on our 10-year yield. And so that seems to be at least like where we're going to go. It seems to me reasonable to expect something like that. And what's going to happen is that few other countries are going to be able to keep pace with the U.S. with the stimulus, with the the vaccine. The U.S. is a very bullish, strong story for the U.S. economy. And this divergence means that other countries' bond markets are likely to hold up better, but that wider interest rate differential favors the dollar.
Now let's talk about what's undoubtedly going to be a wider interest rate differential between the U.S. and Europe, because the ECB had a comment this week that said they are going to significantly increase their purchases of bonds. And it seems like the Fed, they've been standing on the sidelines. So you, I think, can expect a bit more of a divergence there where higher rates are in the U.S. What did you think about the ECB's comments this week and how that plays into the bond market?
Yeah, that is exactly. That's a very important point. Is the ECB basically said, I mean, in so many words, that they're going to significantly boost their bond buying immediately. And so it's not clear exactly what significant means. They're buying a little bit less than 20 billion euros a week. And so significantly, something more than that. But my note of caution would be that there doesn't seem to be a very strong relationship between the size or the amount that the central bank is buying and the performance of yields. So, for example, the U.S. is buying 120 billion worth of between treasuries and agencies every month. That's 80 billion treasuries, 40 billion agencies. And so we're buying more than Europe is, and especially because Europe's bond buying is diffused through many different countries, as you know. Ours is concentrated, and yet U.S. yields have risen farther and faster. And so just like I mentioned that U.S. yields are up 6 weeks in a row, the U.S. premium to Germany has risen 6 weeks in a row. We finished the January at about 158, and we're at almost 195 now, which means that the U.S. yields rising faster than Germany. And so I think that what the ECB told us basically was they may step up their bond buying, but they're not targeting a specific yield level. But they want to focus on really, and I think we're going to hear this from the Fed next week as well, not targeting individual level, but wanting to preserve, maintain easy overall financial conditions.
Isn't that what the Fed also wants to do? However, they're not taking that step, or at least yet they haven't. We do hear from the Fed next week, but are you expecting the Fed to go down that road, or are you, again, expecting a bit of this divergence?
Well, I think the Fed will say that. We'll say that. I mean, cause I think people are confused, I think, about Fed policy. Yields have risen so far, and they still look like they're going up. Why doesn't the Fed buy more long end? Why doesn't it have yield curve control? Or why doesn't it introduce what people call Operation Twist, where they basically buy more of the long end and sell off some of the short end? And I think that the Federal Reserve is not going to go down that path. I think the Fed, as of last week, Powell's saying to us that monetary policy is appropriate. And my sense is that they are viewing, perhaps in a self-serving way, that the rise in yields is ultimately a good thing. It hasn't gone that far. We're still talking, about a 1.4% CPI and a 1.65% 10-year yield. Not so much. And that they think that this is a sign that people are more optimistic about the coming recovery. And so this is a, so I think the Fed is going to be loath to tap it down. And so I think that we should just expect them to say, preserving broad financial conditions, not targeting an interest rate, and a lot of our labor market remains still under pressure. We still have a net loss of about 9.5 million jobs. And so the Federal Reserve is saying it's going to take us a while longer to get closer to our objectives.
Okay, so it sounds like no change then coming from the Fed. So no easier money policy, but also not going down the road of a more hawkish monetary policy. Do you see any central banks starting to lead the way and potentially starting to tighten some of their easy monetary policies?
No, I think for at least the major central banks, too early. But I think that we might get a couple of things will happen. One is, I think, that the Bank of Canada this past week sort of has opened us the door to them adjusting perhaps the 4 billion Canadian billion that they buy every week. Maybe that announcement comes in April. But next week's meetings, I think we get some action from the Bank of Japan. You know, out of the major central banks, the Bank of Japan has a program. Part of their QE is to buy equity, to buy ETFs. And yet the stock market, as of a couple of weeks ago, was near its best level since the early 90s. And so there's an idea that the Bank of Japan may have already changed its tactics and how it intervenes in the stock market to buy these ETFs. And so we could see some kind of formal recognition of this change in tactics that seems to be already taking place. So, for example, they have a 6 trillion yen, which is about $5.3 billion of equities they buy a year. But because of last year's COVID, they were doubling that amount. I could see how they could just get rid of the annual target and just keep that wherewithal to buy if the markets become like unstable or something like that. So it's maybe some tweak there. And the other tweak that they could do is on the bond market. Here's the problem. The Bank of Japan targets the 10-year yield at zero. It allows it to move 20 basis points on either side. As global interest rates rise, it's putting some pressure on Japanese long-term interest rates. Not that we're at the target, but they might want to give it some greater flexibility. The Bank of Japan governor himself sort of plays it down, but his deputy seemed to keep that door open. So we've got the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, too early for them to do anything. In fact, it'd be only the Bank of England's chief economist, Haldane, who seems to be more, he had been quoted recently talking about how maybe central banks are getting complacent about inflation. But his boss quickly took the other side and emphasized and this is the key element of ECB, Fed, Bank of Canada, the RBA, that the increase in prices that they're anticipating looks technical in nature and primarily transitory. So technical in nature, having to do with the decline in last year and the softness of prices, some other technical factors, and then this that they're going to be short-lived. So technical and transitory.
So, Mark, one comment there that you made is that people are saying that the central banks have become almost complacent on inflation, which is fair to say. It sounds like they're watching inflation, but in all fairness, their data has not shown them that inflation is skyrocketing or getting out of hand. If we do start to get that data, aren't the central banks able to switch really quickly? So they're almost able to be complacent right now because the data isn't forcing them into anything?
Well, yeah, maybe. I think that the big surge in our headline inflation is going to take place starting next month. So when we get this month's report in early April, and when we get the April report, and we know this because last year those prices were negative. And so the Fed is saying, in effect, and other central banks more or less the same thing, is that just a pure base effect is going to cause a rise in prices. But we want to see through that. And the reason we want to see through that is because the labor market still needs more help. And so I think that it's really more of an issue of the markets, traders, especially short-term traders, looking at short-term price movement, how it affects things in the short run. And the Federal Reserve here might have to have a different view based on a medium or longer term. And so I think it's getting these like two time perspectives for the Federal Reserve to be able to explain to the markets that this is going to be temporary. And I think it's going to be temporary too. I think that June, July, we're going to see inflation fall back off. So we get it to scare here in the spring and then a little bit easier over the summer.
Why do you think that? Why do you think June and July inflation will drop?
It's no secret, but June and July last year, headline CPI rose by 0.5%. And so that's 1% in 2 months. That'll be modified, even if it comes in at 0.2 or something like that. We're talking about a more modest increase in prices. And also, the big jump in oil price and gasoline prices. You know, in our last CPI report this week, the gasoline prices accounted for about half the rise. And typically, it's a one-off, but more importantly than that for like these energy price and gas spikes is that the Federal Reserve typically has, at least traditionally, understood these things to be deflationary. That is, higher price of gasoline is like a tax on people who drive. And the more they have to pay that tax to the oil, the less they have to spend on other things. And so it really leads to this higher oil prices, higher gasoline prices, but lower prices in other parts of the economy.
One other comment regarding next week then is it looks like all these stimulus checks are going to be hitting individuals' bank accounts. Is it not reasonable to expect, as much as we want to make the argument that markets have already priced this in, that this injection of capital will land at least a little bit in these markets and further push them higher?
That's exactly what a lot of these surveys, especially of the younger people, say 30 and below, what are they going to do with their money? What are they going to do with their checks? And there is a lot of talk of it coming into the stock market. So, of course, people are watching those platforms like Robinhood and watching those stocks like GameStop to see if there is this bleed through.
Which it seems like there will be. But so, Mark, what's the most important thing for investors to understand here as we transition into next week, even through the rest of this month, dealing with all these central banks and, quite frankly, the continued move risk on that we have seen by investors broadly, globally, really?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's what I think it's true that, like, we have seen a big bounce in stocks in the past few days, ending the week on a softer tone, but doesn't seem like that kind of panic like that we saw previously when the NASDAQ had pulled back 10% from its highs. So I think that the system is still full of liquidity, and I think that it makes for treacherous markets, though, because of the heightened volatility, not necessarily measured by things like the VIX, but just measured by how quickly the markets can move in a short period of time.
All right. Well, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. It's always great getting your thoughts on what truly is driving these markets, and especially looking ahead to next week where we do have a Fed meeting and a couple other central bank meetings, plus those stimulus checks. So I think everyone needs to be ready for some more volatility next week and potentially a further push higher in U.S. equity markets. We'll see if that doesn't come to fruition, but I think we all do need to be at least cognizant of what's coming next week. Mark, great chatting with you. Thanks again for taking some time on this Friday. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.